my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me.
Okay, so with a heavy, heavy heart, we bring you the penultimate episode of Firefly Now, Serenity Later. Matt Waters, Mike Thomas, here as always, both sides of the Atlantic. It's time to talk about the end of the actual show of Firefly with episode 14, Objects in Space. I don't actually have to hand when it aired in the actual show, but it was not the final episode aired, so...
Yes, it was not the final episode aired. Yeah. That I can prevent.
Which is weird. But hey, only one episode left. It's a big one, but we will also be talking about the show generally in a way we kind of did with the pilot to sort of bookend things, and we're going to delve into a little bit of special features and extra material and all that good stuff. So even though there's only one episode to discuss, this will be a full-length episode. So you, Mike Thomas, in your head going into this rewatch, The Message was your favourite episode, and then we got to it and it kind of didn't live up to what you thought, or like you remembered it differently, or, you know, we now don't think it's your favourite episode. I thought Objects in Space was my favourite episode. In particular, this guest character, Jubal Early, and what he brings to the show. And same thing happened with me. I watched it again, and instead I find it somewhat troubling. Still way up there, like number two, maybe even number three, but Out of Gas is my favourite episode now. How did this one... How was this in your memory versus just without getting too in-depth with it, like how it lived up?
Generally speaking, I remembered it as being one of my... This thing is one of the best episodes. And watching it now, I think it's definitely one of the best episodes. I think the things you find troubling about it, I also find troubling about it. And
yeah.
And I think that's kind of... We might want to just jump into that aspect of it, because I think everything else will be... It'll be easier to talk about everything else in the context of... Well, once you get past... Well, not get past, but once you acknowledge this issue, a lot of other things about this will get...
Yeah, I feel we need to give this big disclaimer that, like, all of this stuff is a huge issue, so when we then go on to sing the praises of this episode, it's not that we're ignoring this stuff. But, I mean, I'll give, like, a... Well, the synopsis is simple, like, a dude arrives, a bounty hunter looking for River, he boards the ship, he is kicking all their asses, basically, but then River bests him, and they get rid of him. This bounty hunter is called Jubal Early, he's played by Richard Brooks, and for me, he is both the best and worst part of this episode. We'll talk about why he might be the best in a bit, but the reasons why he might be the worst, and why he is... As we like to say, hashtag problematic, and it feeds into something that has kept coming up.
We coined the phrase hashtag problematic. Welcome, everyone.
We did. We are in an intense legal battle to own that IP. Yeah, it's been a recurring thing. The way women are spoken to, the treatment of sort of violence towards women, of sexual violence, etc. Jubal Early threatens to rape Kaylee more than once. He hits Inara, and he is just generally, as part of being a more generally unpleasant human being. And, I mean, I don't want to paint a picture where once upon a time I thought that kind of behaviour was cool, but in my head, Jubal Early was a cool character, and I think he is actually written to be... I mean, Joss Whedon says some of the inspiration for him was Boba Fett, and Boba Fett in sort of geek lore is probably the coolest character there is. So, as I said to you off air, it's not... that he's saying these things because, you know, he's a villainous character. We're not meant to like him. River's sort of final assessment of him makes him sound pitiful. And sort of when he starts to unravel, you see he is a somewhat pathetic villain. And if you're a villain and you're going to be truly evil, you should not be likable and you should say deplorable things. And obviously threatening to rape a person is about as deplorable a thing as you could possibly say. It's not that he says it, it's that it comes with this baggage of him being a quote-unquote cool character and then saying these things.
Yeah, that, I mean, you summed it up pretty well right then and there. And it's interesting. It's just such an exploitative use of sexual violence and violence against women, because think how much more interesting the character would be if, like, part of his code was that he would never, like, he thinks rape is disgusting or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know?
Like in Con Air, where John Malkovich's character, like looks down on the rapist character. Okay.
I'm trying to make a comparison to nuance and subtlety. We're not referencing Con Air ever again, Matthew.
The greatest film ever made. Yeah.
But, you know, like, it was just so unneeded.
They almost got away with it because, like, at first it seems like he's literally just saying it to frighten her, and he has no actual intention of ever doing it. That may even still be true, but by revisiting the concept, like, 3 or 4 times and saying things like, you know, ain't nothing but a body to me, and I can think of all manner of unspeakable things to do to it, etc. I was like, that's too far. You could have made, like... Because he doesn't make these kind of threats to Inara, and he acknowledges it, that, you know, he does believe that that he will hurt people. And he does it to Kaylee, and Kaylee, you know, we've talked about Kaylee, like, she is, at times, treated as quite a meek character, a scared, frail character, and... You know, there's sexuality wrapped up in the Kaylee character, as we've talked about. And to sort of, like, selectively weaponize that threat to her, I don't know how I feel about it, you know? Like, it's... If you're just playing this card because you've assessed this is what she will find scary, and with other people you would go to a different place, it's like, okay, but still hashtag problematic.
Yeah, I just... And also just, you know, this continuing thing with, like, Kaylee being this, like, convenient go-to, needs to be hurt, trapped,
yeah,
kidnapped.
Fridged.
Like, yeah, over and over again. And you can understand the temptation, because she's so likable. And by design, you know, there's plenty of physically capable characters in the show, including women. And we'll see Inara is relatively physically capable, yeah, although we don't really see it much in this movie. We see it in other movies, or I mean, we don't see it in this episode, we see it in the movie for sure.
Yeah.
Kaylee, and Rivers obviously that as well. Kaylee is most definitely not that.
Mm-hmm. As we saw in War Stories.
The temptation is understandable. It's just, like, in the context of the show where they continuously go towards the violence against her,
yeah,
where, you know, Inara has a syringe to, you know, for a rape, ridiculous gang rape storyline that, yeah, they're setting up.
And even if they, like, didn't do that, that was an idea that was had by the creator, so...
Yeah. It's just... Bad people do bad things, and this is a story about a bad person.
It is.
It's just...
But then he's also presented in a way that is clearly meant to be sort of memorable and quotable, and...
I guess, I think we're just past the point where... Now, granted, this was 15 years ago. I don't know how active a discussion it was then. I'm not saying it wasn't, I'm just saying I'm ignorant towards that issue.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in time, I'm just like, I'm not saying rape can't be used in a story. Like, I would never say it can't be used. But if you're going to go there, like, this just felt cheap. This felt exploitative. It was just so unnecessary. It didn't add anything to the story.
Well, yes, and no, I don't know. Again, this whole thing is problematic because it does work on some levels, but then it's unavoidably difficult. Like, when he just comes out with it, when he's not even looking at her, and he's in the middle of a sentence, and he says, "You ever been raped?" And then it cuts to her, and she's just... The dual state sells the hell out of it. Like, it's an incredibly unnerving thing to just come out with. And maybe if they just left it there, and he follows up with, you know, "I have no intention of doing anything to you." If they'd left it there, I'd probably just about be okay with it. Like, it would still be, you know, potentially ill-advised, but as I said, it's revisiting it, and it's going into more depth, and it's then, you know, telling other characters that, you know, if they don't do what he says, he's going to go up and, you know, violate Kaylee. It's like, now you've gone far too far.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just unnecessary would be the word I would... It's just unnecessary. There was no reason to do it. It didn't add anything.
It's extreme. Like,
it's like, I think when you, like, to be so casually pro-rape, which is essentially what Jubal Early is, you are essentially are outing yourself as the worst human being in the world.
Yes.
That in terms of, like, or one, like, not the worst, but, like, you are firmly on the side of, I am a bad person. Mm-hmm. I do not deserve to be humanized, you know? And this episode humanizes him with humor. This episode humanizes him with wit. This episode humanizes him with cleverness. This episode humanizes him with even the traces of a backstory.
Yeah, I like.
And
they do start pushing you down the corridor of feeling sorry for him for a moment.
And all those things are great things to do with a villain of the week type character, who clearly was going to pop up again, as far as I'm concerned. And on top of that, he's also just humanized by the fact that it's a great performance.
It is. That's depressing as well.
And it is irresponsible to so casually just use rape as a device as it was here. And I think that's kind of what it comes down to. I'll put it this way. If there are people who probably judge the show and Joss Whedon harshly for things like that, I do not blame them for that. If that ruins the episode for people, I could not blame them for that. Sure. It doesn't for me, but it's a huge mark against it.
Yeah, totally. It's the kind of thing that, you know, I wouldn't have reacted to as strongly a few years ago, but now I'm in theory, I sort of grown up. It is bothersome, and it does knock it down a little in my estimation. I do think it's incredibly well written and incredibly well acted, and Richard Brooks, like,
it's arguably one of the best performances in the entire show.
Yeah, it chews the scenery, and it's an incredibly memorable character. It's just unfortunate that this is one of the things he's memorable for. And it's unfortunate that you can build this narrative, you know, that you can keep going to, well, Joss Whedon claims he's a feminist, but this, 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 and this. And I ultimately think he is a good person. I don't think he has, views on the world.
I don't think his work is inherently feminist. I haven't seen enough of Buffy. I know there are definitely defenders of Buffy, especially on that front, so I'm not going to speak on that whatsoever. Mm. I think
it does have its moments of problematic as well. There are plenty of
I'm not surprised.
He's well intentioned. I think he is misplaced in his sort of execution a lot.
I think this is when good intentions it's male written feminism.
Sure.
I'm not saying I would do it better. I know I wouldn't do it better, but I'm also not doing it.
It's really difficult. As someone who has dabbled with attempting to write, I am very conscious of the fact that as a man, it's difficult to write women authentically. Like, it's, you almost just shouldn't. But then if you don't, no one wants to read a story about white dudes by white dudes, you know, like, so,
and that's why people should hire more women.
They should. They really should.
Yeah. But I think moving past that, which I think we can do now, it's a really shockingly satisfying conclusion to the show. It is, in some ways, an unintentionally bold series finale. When I say unintentional, it's because they didn't. This wasn't even the last episode.
Was going to butt in with that. It wasn't.
The message is the last episode of the film, but this is considered to be the last episode in the intended order.
But that was decided sort of
retrospectively, I assume.
I think in the middle of it, it wasn't pitched as the series finale.
Yeah. I mean, yes, they were definitely cancelled. They didn't get to make a finale in the sense that we know this is our last episode, let's wrap everything up.
Sure, but I think...
I guess they... Did they position this afterwards as, okay, well, this should be the last one?
Yeah.
Okay. So at least when they made this, they didn't know that they were making a really great, satisfying series finale.
I think the way Joss talked about it was that they realized after, I don't know if it was after writing it or after filming it, that it like really summed up the show in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So it was a fitting sort of send-off.
And it most definitely was. It's not the type of finale you would necessarily expect from this show. You'd expect this show to be a little bit more... I mean, once again, I'm talking about theoretically. But in a very surprising way, I think this is almost the perfect ending to the show in many ways.
Yeah.
And possibly even better of a series finale than what we would have ended up with, which I think would have been far more traditional. Mm. You know, you really get a taste of everybody. You finally get a big River Showcase episode, and Summer Glau knocks it out of the fucking park.
She does, for like a really inexperienced actress who didn't really get a lot of roles afterwards. I mean, she got her big Terminator 1, but like, she's vanished sort of now. Great. Yeah. Fantastic stuff. It is kind of a culmination of everything with River, and like you said, you get a little bit of flavor of everyone. A little bit.
Sean Barr, once again, knocks out the fucking park.
I know, he's the best actor on the show, I think.
I think,
Well, I think we talked about it a lot.
Is probably better, but like in this role, I think Shawn Michaels.
I don't think anyone had a higher degree of difficulty in producing a compelling character than he did.
Yeah, I mean, Mal's got so many like delicious lines that you just have to not be an idiot to be good in that role.
Yeah, Shawn Mar probably he had the stick in the mud role. He is designed to be the Ross of the show, and
well, he's not the worst like Ross.
You know what I'm saying?
Ross is the boring one. Yeah,
yeah, he's designed to be the boring character, and he is anything but boring.
Yeah.
In every single scene.
Yeah, he gives so much to it. Yeah.
But, I think this episode is not really about conclusions or finales. It is more just about kind of becoming at peace. I feel like, in a way, with fate, is to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Which, again, is an incredibly appropriate theme to end a show on, intentionally or unintentionally. And I think that's what this episode is all about, and it's quite beautiful a lot of the times, despite the horrifying things that are coming out of Jubal Early's mouth and from Joss Whedon's pen.
Yes, written and directed by Joss Whedon, this one.
And he actually said in the DVD commentary, when you're coming up with this stuff, it makes you think, am I not as good of a person as I think I am? And you're like, yes.
I do think that about people that have written some of the all-time, nastiest lines of dialogue. That, where does your brain have to go to do this?
Yeah. But, I don't know. I spoke a lot about it. How are your feelings about it? So, I don't even think there's a lot else to talk about with this specific episode.
Oh, well, I've got so many notes. But if you feel that way, thanks for listening to our podcast. No, I think it's great. I've broken it down as a little bit of Kaylee and Simon, a lot of River and a lot of Jubal, and then a lot of miscellaneous. I guess to kind of just, I don't know. I think Jubal bears a lot of talking about. Jubal Early. I think we're gonna have to compartmentalize the stuff we talked about before. But in terms of the rest of what he does and the way it's this kind of off kilter, not quite there, but maybe this is all just a ploy he uses to unnerve people. It's great. He's got a little theme song that they composed for him, this sort of clarinet piece that's a little bit off kilter as well. The way he immediately stumbles onto Mal, it's not built up, it's just, oh. And then they start fighting, and of course he kicks Mal's ass, because as we've said, Mal isn't actually the action hero that, he may posit himself as. Or he probably wouldn't, but, a traditional protagonist of a show like this would be. And he proceeds to give all these little speeches, and he knows all their names, and he likens himself to Santa Claus, and deliberately mishears Alliance as Lion, and just says all of his dialogue, except for the difficult stuff, is just so odd in a very memorable way, and he delivers all of it, which could be incredibly stupid. Richard Brooks does it so well. I don't know, he's very sort of, he does a lot to reveal the nature of some of these characters in some way. Book is who I'm really thinking of here. We've had our teasers with Book throughout the whole show, and obviously with this being the last one, he'll be in the movie, but this is kind of as much as we're going to learn about him from the live-action, non-comic book stuff. And the closest we're going to get to confirmation is Jubal Early knocks him out. And then when Simon sees him and says, you knocked out a shepherd, he says, that ain't a shepherd, in this really sort of dismissive fashion. And you can read that however you want, but there's a very obvious subtext of he sees through who Book is and knows who Book really is, etc. Maybe Book's even got some reputation amongst this community, who knows, but I do really like that one moment. Book barely does anything in the episode, but it's a very memorable Book moment for me.
I was a little disappointed that Book wasn't able to put up a fight at all, but but I think also, Jubal probably recognized who he was and took him out in a non-head-on fashion for a reason.
Yeah. You said earlier how it's quite a bold season finale, and that made me think of the fact that it's bold in the sense that every one of the sort of main characters is immediately incapacitated. and doesn't really get to talk for an extended period of time. Like, he knocks Mal out, locks him in his cell, he locks all the doors on the crew's quarters, so Zoe and Wash, Jane locked in, and Mal locked in. He quickly knocks out Book, and then he's left with Kaylee and Simon. Oh, and he locks Inara in her shuttle, and he's left with Simon and Kaylee, and he's looking for River. So, you know, your final sort of 40 minutes with this cast, you spend most of it with a guest star, the boring character, and, you know, lots of the previously mute River. Well, not mute, but, you know, barely talking River. So that's, I think that's pretty bold that they kind of sideline everyone that has been a driving force up until now.
Yeah, it's, you know, as we talked about, it was, on the surface, it seems like a terrible idea for a series finale, but in practice, yeah, it just kind of works really, really well.
Yeah. And then, I guess this kind of bleeds into River a bit, but I like that, you know, he's so confident in what he's doing, and, you know, even with Simon, he's leaving himself incredibly vulnerable, and he's already openly said, oh, you're going to come with me because every moment you spend with me is a chance you might be able to, like, turn things in your favor. And then when he's just talking and rambling and he's in a vulnerable position, even then he's aware of what's going on because he just pulls a gun on Simon without looking at him and says, it's not your moment, Doctor. So that's good stuff. But when River starts to engage him in this lengthy conversation, at first he shrugs it all off. But I love that the cracks do start to appear to the point that he even calls her Serenity in a sort of unsure way when she's claiming she's become the ship. And, you know, he takes the time to actually engage her in a debate about what he does for a living and, like, who he is. When, up until now, every time someone's attempted to sort of give a character assessment of him, he's reacted dismissively. Like, he struck Inara immediately for, like, using her companion powers to read his psyche or whatever. And he's very quick to sort of get off that subject and throw people off. But River is able to, I guess because of who she is, and we'll talk about that, she does get him to start talking, and he you see it start to melt away as he becomes a little bit more unsure of himself and a bit jittery and snappy and stuff. So I think that is all very interesting, and I think, you know, in a world where he doesn't say all the problematic stuff, I think the most interesting thing about him is he keeps talking about, does that seem right to you? And he talks about power and control and pain and, like, what's right. Or I think River says power, control, pain or something like that. And she talks about his backstory with his mother and him signing up for this job because it involved hurting people. And you get this sort of subtle subtext sense that this is a guy that feels he is a victim of injustice, feels the world, the universe, sorry, the verse, is an unfair place. You get the sense he has suffered from, you know, things that he feels he shouldn't have. And while it may be a fucked up way of addressing that, he feels that by physically, you know, killing, hurting people, he is able to take back a sense of control. I think that is actually a really good bit of character work there. It's just, it comes after all of the stuff that happened before. It's something I didn't actually pick up on when I've watched it previously, but I couldn't help but notice he kept saying, does that seem right to you? And I don't know, I just thought it was a good little character beat.
Yeah, I mean, he's got like a million little ticks that are just like, you want to experience over and over again. You want to see this character more and more. Just, you know, stop threatening to rape people.
Yeah, basically. So River, this is our kind of make good. This is the Big River episode before the Big River movie. I love the beginning of this episode where she is sort of drifting through the ship, and every time she comes upon a character, she gets this quick sort of hallucination, or it might be a visual representation of how her powers work or whatever, where the characters are behaving normally and then all of a sudden they say something that to her is a devastating truth. So Simon says, I should be on the hospital right now or whatever. And, you know, Jane admits that he sold her out because the money was good and all these things. And she's just drifting through and being River, playing with a stick. And then it suddenly, it all turns and you see she's holding a loaded gun and everyone is around her like, oh god, don't do that. It's just a great bit of editing, and a great, like, the way it's shot just really, really works. And it brings us back to a thing we've had happen twice before, where they're trying to sort of assess if she's dangerous and if she should stay on the ship. And they finally just out and out say it. Like, they say she's a psychic. Like, we've had plenty of hints to it. I think because of continuity errors with this not being the final episode shot, I think Jane actually sort of calls her a psychic in a previous episode when he wouldn't know that yet. But they finally confirm it for everyone, what we've suspected, that she can read minds, potentially. Simon says she's just incredibly sort of intuitive. So, you know, it's kind of finally making good on some of this River stuff. I don't know, like, what do you think of that opening, and I guess finally coming out and saying she's a psychic?
I thought it was lovely. The reveal of it being a gun, I think, kind of really captured, you know, both the struggle of what River's been going through for herself, yeah, and also kind of just like made her incredibly empathetic, because, you know, her burst of violence or quote unquote craziness throughout the series had kind of just made her seem like a too much of a pain in the ass, and getting to see like her perspective on the world and what happens to her and things like that was just, you know, very sweet and tragic and sad and all those things, and I thought it was sadly a very necessary moment.
Yes, you get the really like heartbreaking moment where Kaylee, the sweetest angel baby in the whole world, finally confesses to them what happened in War Stories, and she says the line, "Nobody can shoot like that, that's a person." And that breaks Simon's heart after the two had kind of been very coupley at the beginning of the episode. And River is even listening, and to go from that to revealing she's listening, and then pulling out even further to reveal she's sort of standing on some railings in a weird pose, that's great stuff. And you really feel for River, and when she's like devised her plan to save them all, that at first just seems like she's being crazy, but is actually, you know, it works perfectly, and in fact they almost screw it up by not following what she's saying. She starts saying she's, like, melted into the ship and, like, gone away because... And you know, she's talking in a way that is very guilt-trippy. You see them all, the expressions on their face where they all feel pretty guilty for how they've talked about her behind her back and to her face. And she even offers to go with Jubal early. And, like, I don't know if that was a sincere offer or not, but that she says it, and sort of that idea is out there in the world, that she's willing to go with him to make all their lives easier. It's all just so heartbreaking, and like you said, like, she's kind of a pain in the ass at times. But for it to come back around to this moment where you think, God, like, 20 minutes ago they were debating whether she should be allowed to stay on the ship, and now you're seeing all this, it's very sad. Sad for River.
Yeah, it's, and also, and once again, kind of, you know, when you're watching this and you know it's the last episode, you know she's not going anywhere, most likely, but,
God, what a series finale that would be if she went with him, and then it's like, right.
But imagine this was like a season finale and she did go or something like
that.
Yeah. Like, you know, like that totally would have been believable and tragic, and really would have been just this incredible cliffhanger between seasons. And, you know, as we often do when we're watching this, we always think of what more that could have been done.
Yes.
But I think the difference in this case is we had a fully realized villain and a fully satisfying story from beginning to end for an episode, which is, as we discover, not something we can say every time about Firefly. It's really just comes out this episode, like, if he's just like, if they just don't casually exploit rape as like this
currency
for no reason. I would say this is easily the best episode.
Yeah,
with really only Out of Gas competing with it.
Yeah, and they're both huge sort of character assessments and sort of looks into the minds of the characters. So,
yeah, and both, and I think there's the things to keep in mind both episodes is they give everyone a little something to do.
Yeah,
but there's a big focus on one character. Out of Gas, it's Mal. This one, it's River. And both episodes feel complete at the end in a way. They don't feel rushed. The pacing is on point.
Yeah, while also being a little bit gimmicky in terms of the formula of the show.
Yes. which I think tells you that even with just 14 total episodes, how much that formula probably was going to run dry very quickly. I definitely think, you know, not to jump too early into talking about the show as a whole, but it's not a coincidence that Atagas and Objects in Space are so beloved when they really break free from the formula that Firefly had established. Hmm. Worth noting.
Yeah. Speaking of worth noting, I just want to rattle off a few sort of final things I like about the episode. Feel free to jump in on any of them or just say, yeah. I like that. Well, it's just interesting that when River is walking around the ship at the beginning, we see her first and potentially only. She sees Zoe and Wash kissing very passionately, and she kind of reacts in a way that expresses both uncomfortableness and potential, like, jealousy. And it's the first time we've seen her have any kind of thoughts on sort of romance or anything like that. And at the end of the episode, when Mal obviously welcomes her back aboard like he was ever gonna not, it's like the most engaged and quote-unquote normal we've ever seen her. Like, she's smiling. We've seen her smile before, but she's like laughing in a way that isn't like childish. She's making jokes and stuff, and she's saying how Simon's a handful. And if, you know, if this whole season series has been the journey of River, to end on a note like that where she's fully kind of engaged and, you know, has agency and everything, that's good stuff. I like Mal confronting Jane about not wanting to go down the path of talking about whether Jane ever wanted her on the ship. Like, that's a nice callback to Ariel, where Mal knows that Jane was going to betray them and he hasn't told anyone else, but obviously River and Simon know. Speaking of Jane, I really like the moment where I like that he lies about how River got that gun. Like, he claims that all of his guns are locked up and with safeties on, etc. And then we see when Jubal is sort of, you know, doing what he's doing, Jane wakes up suddenly and he pulls this rug down off sort of the wall next to his bed, revealing dozens of non-locked up weapons, only to pull it over himself and go back to sleep. Perfect Jane moment. Finally, I guess, the hilarious line of Wash saying, that sounds like something out of science fiction, when they're talking about River being psychic, to which Zoe says, we live on a spaceship, dear. It's good to finally address that fact. And finally, I like the sort of subtle, or the good writing of when Jubal is sort of stalking up on Kaylee, she initially assumes it's River because they've just been talking about, you know, how River is potentially a danger. So that's a good little moment. That's everything I have for the episode. I swear we can stop talking about it now.
it's just a good episode all around in a lot of ways.
It is. It's a shame about all that rape stuff.
Yeah. Stop casually throwing in rape for whatever reason.
Yeah. All you screenwriters out there who I know are listening, stop that. So this is the end of the first run of, or the only run of the series as a series. We've seen all the episodes. It's tragic that it got cancelled. It seems that Fox were never really fully behind the show. They hated the Western aspect when that's like half the premise, that it's kind of a Western. They thought it was too dark, too pessimistic. They wanted it to be more like, you know, quippy Mal and Mal having a romance with Zoe and all these things. They were never fully invested, and now, however many years later, they're all in on Seth MacFarlane's science fiction show, Orville. So, fuck all of that. You know, it lives on in infamy as this famous series that got cancelled despite being so popular. The fandom
despite having such a passionate fan base,
there you probably go.
More accurate.
Correcting me, as always. You'll let her catch me when I say dumb stuff. And we'll talk about some other stuff, but before I forget, my favourite piece of Firefly trivia is that when they had finished, you know, all production, Alan Tudyk, who had stolen the button from Out of Gas that summons the crew back, he gave it to Joss as a kind of symbolic, if you ever manage to resurrect this show, push this and we will all come back. It's just, that's a great story because of how close we know this cast were, how much fun they had making it, and just sort of the sentimentality of it all. I love it. So let's talk about, do you want to do special features, or do you want to just talk about
So I can quickly run them down. And
sure, you can handle this.
Yeah, so I've got the original DVD set of Firefly. I do not have the Blu-ray. It contains a number of special features on the final disc with the that goes with Message, Heart of Gold, and Objects in Space. There's about a half hour making of Firefly feature. It's a bit overlong. It feels very old. Like, the show does not feel old. The show feels like it could come out today. This 30-minute making of feature feels very old.
I know.
It's so cheesy and cornball in so many ways. Also, because, like, at the time, you know, when this DVD set came out in 2003, I'm sure it was jam-packed with new information. Pretty much everything in here is pretty well-covered material at this point. Like, this is only something to watch if you just, like, started watching the show and know nothing about the fandom, the world, anything. It's really not for people. I think it would basically be pretty useless for anyone, even in our position, who are not browncoats, but are, you know, fans, longtime fans of the show. And also, another big thing is that these people think they were making the greatest show in the world. Mm-hmm. You've never seen such big boosters of a show as these people were. I guess something about it, like, 15 years later makes it, like, a little eye-roll inducing. I'm at the time, though, I'm sure it would just be, like, rah, 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 cheerleading for something you really love. But all this time later, I'm just kind of like, okay, like, calm down. You're not making the fucking Wire here or anything like that. Like, you're making a very, very watchable, endearing, space western. But, at a half hour is just way too long for something like this, given all the other issues. Let's see. The next feature was Serenity, the 10th character.
Yes.
Because the ship is a character. I think we discussed on the very first episode, I find that kind of talk cheesy, but whatever. I thought the most interesting thing here was how much they tried to, not because it's, you know, Firefly is a bug, they tried to, like, give the ship, especially in how it flew and how it maneuvered with scenery and things, and maneuvered with other objects. They tried to make it act and seem like a bug. I thought that was kind of cool. That was something I didn't really pick up on while watching it, but I can appreciate it more in retrospect. But, obviously just, you know, the ship was a fully realized set. Everyone loved hanging out in there. It felt like home. And I think that feeling of home really translated well on screen, which is part of the reason why everyone loves the show so much. There's four deleted scenes, just randomly about four different episodes. I have found, in 17 years of owning DVDs and thus having regular access to deleted scenes, that deleted scenes are deleted for a reason.
Yes.
This is, I think when you first start getting into DVDs in the early 2000s, you're like, deleted scenes? Oh my. Look at this treasure trove of material that I now get to consume. With Firefly, most of these scenes were pretty useless. The most notable one was that in The Hour Mrs. Reynolds episode, River's reaction to Saffron is to, like, she tries to, like, convince Simon to marry her, and it was very weird. It wasn't funny. Like, I can understand why they thought it would be funny. It was mostly just kind of weird, though. And
do they have good chemistry? I don't really offhand remember those two characters interacting.
No, I should say I think that's probably actually, in fact, anything, I thought they kept them away, kept her away from them.
Yeah,
River, but maybe that's something else.
Yeah.
But regardless, it was just very, very, not a bad concept to make, like, let's do something outlandish and funny. Good thing they cut it, though, because it wasn't really that funny.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see Alan Tudyk's audition for Wash.
Yes. It was
very, very, very fucking charming.
Yeah.
dude's a charisma machine. I've loved him forever in a wide variety of things. I can't wait for him to get a break as, like, a big villain somewhere. He got to play villain of the week on an episode of Justified in the bad season of Justified, and he was fucking awesome. And I really can't wait for that to happen one day. Love Alan Tudyk. Have loved him in pretty much everything I've ever seen him in. Charming fellow. The gag reel was what you would expect. It was a gag reel.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the gags were funnier than others. Some mistakes were funnier than others, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We got to see Joss Whedon tour the set. It was not really notable. I'm surprised.
That dude used to look rough.
Yes. And also we got to see Joss Whedon sing the theme. Joss Whedon, my main note on this, is not a good singer.
He's not bad.
But he's not a good singer.
Well, no, but I wouldn't say he's like, oh god, how bad is this dude?
I didn't say that. I simply said he's not a good singer.
Wow.
But yes, I wouldn't say the DVD special features are underwhelming. And I've got a loaded edition of Serenity, so I'm guessing those special features would be far more satisfying. But these special features are pretty unspecial.
It's the exact same stuff on the Blu-ray, or at least the British Blu-ray that I have.
But what is good about the DVDs that are not labeled special features, they're labeled under language options for about half the episode, are the commentaries. And the commentaries are awesome.
Yeah.
Every commentary is worth listening to. You get either great stories, great insight, but also just like you get to basically feel like you're watching a show with a bunch of charming people who are, you know, just happy to be watching the show and talking about it, and obviously have actual insight into what they're talking about. Every single commentary is worth listening to. I think it's on about half of the episodes, but if you have access to the DVD, you should get it. Now, you speculated that Blu-ray had commentary for all the episodes. Is that true, or is that... is your mind playing tricks on you?
I'm not physically holding it right now, but I think it does.
Okay, well,
I may be imagining that. There's certainly several. It may only be half of them, like you said, but I do remember every time I was sort of... It seems like every time I was scrolling through the episodes to select one, it seemed like almost every one of them had a commentary, but I may be just lying out of my face here.
But, yeah, that's, you know, especially since it's not on Netflix anymore.
Yeah.
I'd say the DVDs are well worth owning, just because I think if you like the show, odds are you're going to enjoy rewatching it. I already can't wait to when I rewatch it next. I don't know when or that'll be exactly, but I had put off rewatching it for a few years to make sure I savored it the next time, and that was worth it. I can't wait to rewatch it again, though, because it is just so much fun.
Yeah.
And it's just fun.
I've enjoyed the hell out of it. I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't listen to those commentaries. I was... looking forward to doing that, but I just never could find the time to do so. What I have seen is, it was on Netflix, I don't think it is anymore, there is a documentary called Brown Coats, which is just, it's like an hour of just fans talking about Firefly and sharing stories about, oh, I buy it for like everyone I know just to like get those DVD sales up, and I think Adam Baldwin's it. I think there's interviews with every member of the cast, but Adam Baldwin appears several times in it, and it's from memory, like I saw it like over a year ago, it's like 50% charming and sad, and then 50% oh no, with people that have taken it a little bit far with their fandom. I don't want to shame anyone. You like a thing and you're passionate about it, I support the hell out of you for doing so, but it is a little bit like much to try and get your head around some of it. But hey, it's a very passionate fan base. They are.
Is it called Brown Coats Unite?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think I see a video of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
So that's fine.
Fandom is weird.
It is.
It comes across even weirder when it's not something you're a fan of.
They are always a harmless, nice fandom. Like, we've talked a lot about comic books on this show, and comic book fans are kind of the worst. Some of them very inclusive and lovely. Famously, a lot of them very defensive of the thing they like, not welcoming of new people, hostile towards women. Not cool. At least the Brown Coats are, you know, friendly, if a bit strange. That's all I've got on the extracurricular materials. This huge book I have is full of lovely glossy photos and cast interviews and little bits of trivia and stuff. There are three little short stories written by people that wrote episodes. One's about Kaylee, one's about River. I think there's one about Book as well, but I'm very disappointed in myself I didn't read them. But they're like 4 pages long, so they're not exactly like mind-blowing, but... You, I believe, began to read some of the comic book, right?
Yes, I read Serenity, Those Left Behind, which is, according to Wikipedia, a 3-issue comic book limited series published by Dark Horse Comics. It was written by Brett Matthews with Joss Whedon, credited for the story, illustrated by Will Conrad, and colored by Cory Martin. Basically, it bridges the show Firefly with the movie Serenity. It was
basically a promotional item for Serenity, and also to kind of like catch fans up on what had happened between Firefly and Serenity. And it is very, 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 very blatantly and somewhat shallowly just that. It basically ties up some loose ends from the show. It connects some dots from... It fills in some gaps between what happens from the show to the movie. It ties up loose ends that you did not know were actually needed tidying up. I'm just going to go into it. I don't think care about spoilers. Yeah. So basically... it's like an episode. That's what it kind of feels like. It feels maybe like a two-parter, essentially, in terms of how much plot they stuff in. This episode is about Book coming to the conclusion that he needs to leave. It is about Mal confronting his resistance to letting Inara leave. Not that he's ever openly not letting her leave, but he always keeps delaying it. Mm-hmm. And then it's also about the 2x2 Hands of Blue Men. Making one last go at River. And basically, the episode starts off with a robbery gone wrong for the crew, as always. Uh-huh. And part of the plan was Book distracting the people in town with a sermon. Bang, bang goes off, things go to hell, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then Book steals this like monster truck to rescue everybody and drive them to Serenity. And while they don't, they don't beat you over the head with it, clearly this is like Book making a choice here that's not completely in character for him, and him questioning why he's doing that. That pays off later because Book is confronting Malcolm about something else, and eventually leads to Book punching him in the face, because Mal just keeps provoking him until that actually happens. At the end, Book lets Malcolm know that he's leaving, and basically, it's because he says, it's not that I punch you, it's that I'm afraid that eventually I'll be okay with punching you or something. So he decides it means it's time for him to go. The big plot thing going on in this is the 2x2 Hands of Blue Men are making a last go at River. And who did they run into?
I don't know.
But Dobson. Who is Dobson, Matt? He is the Fed from the very first episode, who was undercover trying to capture River and Cyber.
The fourth new passenger.
Yes. The new passenger who did not work out. And why did he not work out? Because he was a federal agent and he was shot in the head.
He shot Kaylee.
Yes, he shot Kaylee too. And Mal shot him in the head.
Sure did.
And sent him off the ship. Because, he was shot in the head.
And yet you say he returns.
And yet he returns. And he returns here with a metal contraption surgically grafted to his fate, to his eye, in fact. Because he was not killed. His eye was merely blown out by the bullet.
A perfectly survivable injury.
Yes. Because it's that perfect angle where the bullet can remove the eye, but your head, the brain, everything else is fine too. And Dobson has been on this crusade, it's revealed, that he's become obsessed with killing Malcolm Reynolds in the meantime. And so the 2x2 Hands of Blue guy, who are people who are always a bit a step below, use Dobson basically to catch up to Mal and company for reasons that are not clear why they feel the need to even bother using him. Unless they kind of just want a distraction. But I guess that's it. They want like someone to take the busy Mal and the other fighters so they can get River more easily. Badger sends Mal and company off on this wild goose chase, supposedly the spot of a very bloody part of the war. There's supposed to be just a bunch of money there, but turns out it's basically just this abandoned area. There is no money, so Badger was paid off, presumably, betraying Mal's trust.
Not Badger.
I know. Dobson and his group of followers, I guess, I don't know what else to call them, confront Mal, Jane, and Zoe. Banter ensues. Zoe starts killing everybody. Jane starts killing everybody. And Mal somehow is able to shoot Dobson's other eye. Whether or not this kills him is not entirely clear.
Well, obviously not. Mal did it the first time.
And then Mal, I think, shoots him again one last time to make sure he's dead. Okay. I guess. That's what Wikipedia says. I actually missed that somehow, embarrassing enough. Anyway, the 2x2 Hands of Blue Men are, meanwhile, that's going on, trying to get into the ship. They're almost successful, but Simon hits one of them with Jane's weight set. They lock them in some other part. As soon as the ship gets moving, the 2x2 hands of blue men are incinerated.
Whoa.
Yes. And the teaser, you know, and Mal finally says goodbye to Inara. Book says he's leaving. And the teaser is the operative from Serenity getting the mission. And he's faceless in this, but it's very clear if you have seen the movie that it's the operative.
Yeah.
While this book is mostly one, it needlessly resurrects a character who did not need to come back from the dead.
Hmm.
It mostly is just there to bridge the gap between two properties that they're far more invested in. You realize very quickly that you are very starred for Firefly hashtag content. And I immediately added the other four volumes to my Amazon cart, and I will purchase them soon. It feels like an episode of TV. It's fun. It's fun.
Cool.
I think if you're a fan of the show, it's worth reading. As I said, I mean, I'm buying the next four volumes, so I clearly agree. And, you know, the fifth volume is coming out this year, so this is not something that's dead.
I thought it was okay. Yeah. They did a couple and that was it.
No, I mean, they don't come out, the volumes don't come out often, but the fifth volume's coming out this August, so, you know, this is...
And they're all set in between. Thing.
I do not know.
Yeah, because, like, isn't it only either 4 weeks or, like, 4 months between the show and the movie?
I'm guessing, based on some of the titles of the volumes, that some of them come after Serenity. I'm guessing some come before.
You could also do some interqual stuff where some of it happens between episodes, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Thumbs up, but, you know, I, as someone who is not a comic fan, I'm more of just... a fan of the characters that comics are responsible for.
Yes.
I can't really analyze the comic on that level. It seemed to look good enough to me, though. It's not a medium that I truly appreciate or understand or analyze in any sort of significant way. But as a fan of the show, as a fan of the characters, it got the job done.
Well, that's what you're looking for, really.
Yes.
So that's kind of it for Firefly-ass Firefly, you know?
Yeah.
The show was cancelled, you know, the episodes were aired out of order, three of them were never shown.
Apparently they aired the next summer, the following summer.
I thought that was the case, but...
Yeah. I think when they put together the DVD packaging, those three had still not been aired, and that's why they say unaired. Okay. I found air dates for them for the following summer, Fox needs some content, here's original content, et cetera.
Shove something on the air and walk away for 40 minutes. Well, there you go. It was famously cancelled. It lives on forever as one of the shows that... It's a joke at this point. People make reference to, bring back Firefly. And, you know, in this crazy world of reboots and remakes and unnecessary sequels decades later, hashtag Young Morpheus, you never know, but they all... I doubt it. Maybe something, someday... But I don't think Firefly's coming back. I don't think there's going to be another movie, personally.
And I don't think there should be.
Probably not. The show ends, even though it was premature, it does actually end in quite a satisfying way, given the circumstances. The movie we will talk about next episode, so let's not really talk about that.
But also just the fact that it gets a movie in the first place.
Like, yeah, it's like so many things are out there that people are wanting this kind of thing, and this got it. Because that was a thing. Like, I'm not an expert on the sort of the huge campaigning in this period of history. I probably should have been if we were going to talk about it even briefly. But at some point between it being cancelled and Serenity coming out, there was obviously an enormous sort of petition.
It got a $40 million movie. Like, even like fucking Veronica Mars was a fucking Kickstarter.
Yeah, it probably would have been if that had been around then. But
yeah, it got a $40 million movie. It gets comic books that are still being released. Like, this is not... I'd much rather have something end too early than end too late. There are four extremely mediocre seasons of The American Office. Four. Like...
Out of eight.
Yeah, out of 8.5. Like, four are extremely, extremely mediocre and flawed. With the last two possibly even very arguably being bad. Like, you want things to end on a good note. You want things to end leaving them wanting more. You don't want them to be hanging on for dear life. It's just, art is better remembered that way.
It is. It's just given how obvious at times things were supposed to be ongoing stories. And, you know, some of them are addressed in the comics, some of them are addressed in the movie, but...
Hey. It would be great if they could have at the time made like 5 more episodes or 6 more episodes to finish it out.
Mm.
And you know, if it was on an FX or an AMC or an HBO, they would have gotten that opportunity. It would have been great if the first movie did gangbusters and, you know, they were able to make like 2 more films out of it or something like that. Mm. That would have been awesome too, but it's okay.
Yeah. Do you know what I'd really like? I would like for Joss Whedon and as many of the cast are as available to do it, would just sit down around a table for like an hour on camera and just talk about the show and like where they saw it maybe going, etc. Just like a big farewell, some sort of like however many years anniversary piece. I think that would be cool. Just have Joss Whedon just out and out say, this is what was going to happen.
Inara was going to get gang raped.
Yeah, like, there's so many, like, rumors and sort of Comic-Con type stories of, oh, so-and-so said that this was going to happen. Like, I'd like to just have a definitive, I don't know if it exists, maybe the comic is supposed to be that, but a definitive on-the-record, on-camera, Joss Whedon talking about his plans for the show.
I don't even think that's needed. I don't.
I don't know. It would be nice to see, like, as a way
it
down
the
line.
It got a fucking movie. Like, this isn't, like... I'm not trying to be flipping and cut you off. I'm just saying, like, it got a movie.
It got a
this
movie.
This is not...
It did get it, like, a movie. And we're going to talk about that movie next week.
With
a
special guest.
That's right. I'm just waiting to see if you... I don't know. Like, are we going to reveal
I thought that would guest? Be the fun... No, we're not. I thought that was just going to be a really funny, like, sad, somber, dead air end to the episode.
Oh, okay. It still can be. With our special guest. If I decide in the edit that's not funny, thanks for listening, too. The first stage of Firefly Now Serenity Later. The second stage is going to be much shorter, and then it's one more episode where we will talk about the movie Serenity with our special guest. Potential pause. SoundCloud.com/MikeandMatt, Futurama.net, blah 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 blah. Thank you for listening. I've really enjoyed going through Firefly again, and we will talk more about all of this next episode. No place I can be since I found Serenity. You can't take the sky from me.